Welcome to the EFT World Summit. This is your host, Jessica Ortner from TryItOnEverything.com. Dr. Leese is a psychotherapist, registered clinical counselor, and EFT expert with 20 years of experience. In this session, we will learn why and how Dr. Leese has been using EFT to help clients overcome trauma. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. Welcome, Alex.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. Let's dive right in. How do you define a trauma?
Trauma is a personal response to some event, circumstance, or situation that has occurred. And what we have to be clear on is the subject itself may not be a trauma for everybody. For instance, a child falls off their tricycle and they're traumatized for years. Another child falls out of a tree and is not. But there are certain categories that through feedback, through research, and practical experience that we look for or ask questions on when we're dealing with trauma, like divorce, accidents, be they car or otherwise, losing a loved one, and that could be through illness, accident, as I say, or violence, being fired, sexual abuse is a big one, emotive abuse is another, war, terrorism, and so on. So if a person has any of those in their background, we're a little more diligent about finding out if they were traumatized by it. So in that sense, we can categorize it, but the key is to realize we have to find out if the person was traumatized, as opposed to, oh, you were in a car accident, you must be. And then we have to find out, and that's where it gets a little tricky, how do they do it? How do they do the trauma?
What do you mean?
Well, we're unique. We're all unique. This one person may decide, the brain may decide, based on what occurred, they're no longer going to be involved in that subject matter, whatever it was that traumatized them. The next person may socially withdraw, because people are dangerous or might lead them to others. Brains make various decisions. I'll give you a quick example. He was picked by his company because of his years of experience and charismatic nature. They asked him if he'd become a trainer. And he started getting heart palpitations, dry mouth, couldn't sleep, insomnia. Fast forward through three or four sessions, we traced it to a grade 7 incident. So that's quite a few years back, where the members of his rugby team talked him into kissing the prettiest girl in class for her birthday. And so he walked up to her with all the boys watching, of course, and gave her a peck on the cheek and said, happy birthday, and she slapped him. Well, the boys started laughing, so being in front of groups is humiliating was the decision his brain made because of the mild trauma that it went through. So here he is at early 30s being asked to become a trainer, and the idea of talking to people triggered all that humiliation, etc., from age, 14, somewhere in there. So we cleared the memory with tapping, and he said, Doc, I gotta tell you, this is the craziest therapy I've ever been through, and I really don't buy there's a connection between what happened when I was a kid and now. And I said, okay, well, you've got a meeting in a couple of days to discuss the training you're going to go through to become a trainer. Give me a call after. So he did, and I said, well, how is it? How's what? Well, you talked about the budget, and they're going to train you to train. Oh, that's fine, he said. It's just I didn't like the room, and we're going to make some changes. There was no dry mouth. There was no nervousness. There was no blankness. And then later, when I checked with him, the insomnia had gone and so on. So he just figured he'd gone through a phase, and I agreed with him. Why not?
You know, you've been trained in a lot of different areas, and you have the traditional training. So one of my questions for you is, how has working with EFT compared to what you've learned, you know, traditionally when it comes to working with trauma?
The simple answer is faster. You still have to do the information gathering, which is an art unto itself. And that can vary with the personality. Some people have learned, let's say, in their life that nobody listens. So they're going to be difficult to extract the information from. So you need rapport. Mm-hmm. Other people, and so on. So once you learn how to extract the data, now we're going to compare, let's say, EFT with psychoanalysis. There's a distinction I would invite everybody to make. There's content. That is, the person is presenting a story. They're presenting an experience that bothers them in some way. That's content. And there's a fuel that's driving it. There's an energy that makes it express itself. That's the emotion. So, in effect, you learn to think in terms of, I'm listening for the emotion to verbalize itself. As soon as you pick up that the person is starting to emote, you can interrupt and say, what are you feeling? They'll tell you. 9 times out of 10, that's the exact emotion driving their story. And so you then introduce EFT, you tap them, and the story starts to collapse because you've taken the fuel out of it. So speed, efficiency is the way I would categorize EFT, especially for emotive-based issues.
If we want to start doing this, a lot of times when people have a certain story, we're not aware it's even a story. It seems like facts. It seems like the way that it is. So what advice do you have to help us see that it is just a story?
Okay, well, maybe I'm making, by the way you phrased your question, it allows me to perhaps fine-tune what I said. When we're doing some electrophysiology research, that is, you hook people up to equipment and you get oxygen levels and is it a parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system response, we're looking for the well-known stressors. And what we discovered was, even if what they were talking about and feeling bad about had not happened in reality, but their brain thought it did. One example is mom keeps telling the boy this happened to you or the girl this happened to you when you were a little girl or boy. The brain can then start to remember it as if they do remember it. The fact they're remembering mother's version gets deleted. And we found we have to treat that exactly the same as if it actually occurred because it's having the same effect on the neurology, brain chemistry, attitude, self-esteem, as if it happened and they remembered it. What they're really remembering is mother's version of something. And that's only one example. So whether it's real or false memory, it has to be treated with respect because it has the same outcome.
Wow, that is fascinating.
It certainly is fascinating stuff. You know, I love the science because to me, can we prove it? And that's science to me. And so, you know, when we've had the opportunity to hook people up to biofeedback equipment or galvanic response meters, and then say, okay, so what happened? Well, I was in this car accident, and the car rolled over, and I thought I was going to die, and the equipment is going off the charts. So you say, stop. You've already preset them up, what you're going to do, so you tap them as they focus on that feeling, on that memory, and then you have them start again. Okay, I was driving along, and the guy hit me, and the car rolled. It was awful. And the equipment is showing is starting to flatten out on an emotive response. So any negative effects that accident caused, fear of driving, whatever it is in the future, begins to abate. In other words, that's healing. But I'd like to make another point on that, if I may, Jessica, and that is, again, with some people, you can remove the original cause. You know, I think Gary Craig refers to it as core issues. So you go back and find the core issue, which pretty well means the experience in time. So you clear the emotion out of that experience in time, but they may have developed habitual responses. So we have two things. We have, I'm responding to this trauma, and I've now got a habit of doing it. So you clear the original imprint, but you may still have to deal with the after effect. So sometimes you have to be diligent and make sure you're checking both. A good example, this may clarify, is smoking. I've had people come in to quit smoking, and they've come in after and say, oh, no, I haven't had a smoke in three, four weeks. And as they get nervous talking about something else, their hands start looking for the cigarettes in their pockets. That's a habit.
Okay.
they've quit, but they're still running the motor senses.
Now, do we just clear that with time and with conditioning, or is that something
no.
we focus on with the EFT?
I'm just thinking one client in particular, I said, your hands tell me a message. And he said, what's that? It looks like you're looking for a cigarette. Oh, yeah, he says, when I get nervous, I do that. Oh, do you want to keep it? He said, well, no. I mean, I guess it looks silly, doesn't it? I said, okay, let's get rid of it. So we just tapped him, and if I remember, the words were something like, this continuous desire to reach for my cigarettes, this unconscious habit of patting my pants looking for my lighter, whatever. It's really this. So he would give me feedback, and we'd change the word pattern, and he stopped the hand movements.
Wow. Okay, so this is almost like we're splitting it up when we're working with trauma. We're doing first working on the core issue and then following up with any habits that might be remaining.
If we can get the original, that really, really, really enhances the work. But there are cases where the person has not been able to remember and their intake form shows they've gone through psychiatric intervention with sodium amethyl and so on and so forth, you know, a truth serum designed to bring up the original memory, and not been successful, and we've still been able to remove the effects, the limitations it caused. It varies, you know, as quickly as we make a rule, human beings break them. So you have to go with the flow.
I've heard you talk before about how people store traumas differently. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, loosely put, we categorize idiosyncratics of personalities into groups, but what we try to emphasize is we are not categorizing the person. We're not saying, for example, this person is a visual, that person's an auditory, that person's a kinesthetic. What we're saying is their processing internally is predominated on one of those, shall we say, channels. So once you hear it in their speech, one will talk very fast and say, well, look, let me show you what happened. Well, if you tune your ear and train it, you heard, look, let me show you what happened. So you would want to come back knowing with visual dominant words, let me show you a way to fix that. So you're matching them or gaining subconscious rapport. You're speaking the same language. At the same time, when you're tapping them, they may be not focused on the feeling. They're perhaps more focused or more aware of the images in their mind. So what I've done where they're stuck like that, I've said to them, look, what I want you to do is keep looking at that picture that causes the feeling you don't want. And as you do, I'll tap you. So watch the picture and tell me what happens. It's very interesting. Sometimes I've got feedback. The pictures have holes in them. Or another one said, well, it used to be like 3D and panoramic, and now it's kind of a square picture in front of me with holes in it. Or somebody else said it's gone from brilliant colors to muted, sepia. Something about the picture changes. And then we have them tell the story again about what happened, which is visual access, and they're kind of flat about it. So you don't necessarily have to get them to focus on the feeling if, in fact, they're visually dominant. Same is true for auditory. They may be more involved in the words and listening to the story in their head, so they're kind of dissociated, but their language patterns will be, let me tell you what happened. You know, I've heard this EFT might work, but it doesn't ring any bells for me. So all their words tell you they're auditory dominant. So again, you want to find out how the auditory relates to the feelings or get them to be aware of it and then tap out the unwanted emotive response evoked by the story they're telling. It's just fine-tuning. Mm-hmm. At the same time, to be fair, I've trained people that didn't continue to the advanced level. They weren't interested in the auditory dominance, the visual, and they still had a pretty good success with the tapping. So who knows?
No. When you're sitting with a client and you want them to tell you what happened, you know, whether it's to imagining it or, you know, saying it, depending on their modality, how do you have them do that without getting into a panic state if they, you know, without having to have them relive the experience and really, you know, have all those feelings right there in the office?
I usually pre-frame them. I usually say to them, I know you do not want to talk about this because it just evokes bad feelings. It makes you feel bad and ruins your day. If I get a little head nod, they're in effect saying, yes, you understand. However, what I'm going to ask you to do is tell me the story of what occurred, and what I'm going to do is reach over and tap those eraser buttons. And they go, eraser buttons, whatever I call them that day. Yes, you see, what's driving the story predominantly is the feeling, the kinesthetic, the emotion inside. It's an energy. And what we want to do is delete the energy from the story. I tell you what, tell me the story, and I'll start tapping, and you'll experience what I mean. So as they tell the story and start getting into the panic or the fear or the dry mouth or the I don't want to talk, or I tap on whatever they call that feeling, and then I back them up and start again until they can tell me the story without triggering the emotion.
Okay, so basically the whole time you're taking steps with them, so you're tapping with them as they first attempt to tell the story. Or anytime you find that they're telling the story and emotions come up, you go right in and start tapping.
Yes.
Is that right?
Now,
okay.
Again, as soon as we write that down as a rule, we have to come up with the exceptions. Sometimes I've not tapped them, and they've said, hey, you know, you worked with my friend and got rid of her fear of bridges. How come we're still talking and I'm emoting? It's sort of a surface emotive response. And what I've found is if you tap too early, and only, I guess, time and experience teaches you how to make those distinctions. If you tap too early, you flatline it, and they go, okay, I feel better, and away they go. But they haven't really grown. They haven't really evolved. They haven't really undone the bad stuff. They just, it's not so bad. So sometimes I do not tap them, let them go deeper, and we're closer to the core issue that way. If you get the core issue, then more often than not, everything they're presenting collapses. If not, there is a danger that core issue can re-express itself in new symptomology sometime in the future. So they, you know, they could be on a treadmill coming to see you for the next 6 months as this thing keeps changing form. That's why you're after the core issue.
Okay. Can you explain to us, step by step, when you're tapping with someone, how do you go through it? Do you start off with simply them telling the story and tapping on the story, or do you focus on particular aspects of the story? How do you know where to go?
As they sort of give me an outline, some will just, you know, I was in this car accident and I lost my leg and my best friend died and blah, blah, blah. That sounds to me, just the way I did it there, that the person's totally dissociated from the memory.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're dissociated, the tapping is less than effective because you have to be, quote, in your body, in that experience, to have the most effective response to the tapping. Dissociation, like you've perhaps heard the term dissociative disorder, and that indicates or implies dissociation is bad. We must get rid of it. Well, not necessarily. Again, dissociation is a part of the defense mechanism to protect us from trauma. So we dissociate. We sort of see ourselves in the memory, and the feelings are subdued by the fact we're dissociated. So in that case, when the person says, well, I was in the car accident. Yeah, I lost my best friend. It was awful. Oh, well, you were driving. Yes. Okay, so as you imagine now, sitting in the seat, looking over the steering wheel, looking through the windshield, where does the experience start? Like you're driving along, everything's fine. Now, where does the bad part start? Well, I looked off to my, oh my God, and now they're into it because I've just associated them by getting them to look over the steering wheel through the windshield. They're in their body. In extreme cases, putting them back in their body is going to be more trauma. So we have them tap on the dissociated self, but you have to discuss that and make that distinction for them. Most people are not aware of associated and dissociated states. So you make sure they understand it and say, okay, I had one that said, no, I can't see myself in that situation. This isn't going to work. And I said, oh, can you see yourself in the mirror? Oh, yeah. Yeah, every morning. Great. In a like and similar way, there's a part of you back in time, a little younger than you are now, that really needs your help. Can you see her or him? Yes. Okay. Let's reach through time. And as I tap you, I want you to send that back to her as if you're tapping her or we're tapping her through time. Now, somebody might call that borrowing benefits. I don't care. That's just a label. But that's one way or two ways of dealing with dissociation. Get them back into their body. If they resist, that's a good reason. Tap on the dissociated, but tell them that's what we set it up so they're consciously aware of it. Otherwise, it doesn't work as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking it really is a lot of information for people that are listening to this and they're a little bit new and they're hearing this and their brain's spinning a little bit, you know,
yes.
Thinking that it is a big leap from where they are right now. What advice do you have for someone who's new to EFT, some key points that they can do to help them get to this place?
Okay, I would ask them to make a decision that they're going to get the mechanics down second nature. Go through the points, tapping them. You can think about something or not think about something, but just tap all the points so you can do it second nature. If you do not, some part of you while you're tapping, yourself or others, I wonder if I'm tapping long enough. I wonder if I'm tapping firmly enough. There'll be all kinds of other thoughts or scattered thoughts because what we want is focus on the feeling. So, I would suggest to them, take a deep breath, realize you've been learning all your life, some was easy, some wasn't. If it wasn't, it was chunked up too big, so chunk it down, make smaller steps. I'm going to learn the buttons. So tap, tap, tap. Do that until you've got them down pat. Second, okay, from now on, when I use the buttons, I'm going to think in two ways. One, something happened, and two, it generated an unwanted emotive response. The name of the unwanted response is unique to me. For example, my wife, 32 years, has a favorite habit of saying, Alex, the thingy's broken. Now, if she's frustrated with the thingy being broken, I could tap her because her brain knows exactly what she's talking about when she uses the word thingy. I, on the other hand, being just a lowly male and husband, have to figure out which category thingy is in this week. Is it under the hood of the car? Is it electronic? Is it part of the lawn furniture? And she'll go, you know, the thingy. The point is, she knows exactly what she means by thingy. In a like and similar way, people need to give themselves permission that when they say, it sucks, then they need to tap on this sucky feeling. If whatever words they use inside their head to describe the feeling are the optimally best words to use as a reminder phrase while you're tapping the buttons. This sucky feeling when I X, whatever X is. So, for instance, my background, behavioral science, clinical psych, the emphasis was, oh, you have, and we label the client. Here we're asking that to be reversed. Ensure the client or the individual using tapping on themselves is using their own words to describe the feeling and use that as a reminder phrase to tap. So just a real recap, a fast recap, get the mechanics out of the way, learn the buttons, there's only a few of them, and then realize there's something that occurred and there's a feeling associated with it. We're on a boat cruise. And the gentleman was standing on the rail trying to entice his wife to join him. And you could tell by her body language there was no way. So I said to her, do you have a fear of water? She said, no, fear of heights. I can't look over the rail. I said, well, look, I've been playing with something here, and I'm just practicing with people. I wonder if I could borrow you for a minute. Well, people don't know what to do when you say, can I borrow you for a minute? So they usually say, sure. So I said, okay, I don't know if this is going to work, but I just want to see if the fear of height buttons work while we're actually in a situation. So I babbled away as I tapped her, and she walked about 3 feet towards the rail and said, no, I'm still nervous, not realizing she'd moved 3 feet closer. So I said, oh, maybe I did it wrong. Let me try it again. So I did it again, and she said, oh, yeah, that was a lot better pressure, and that was nice. Fast forward 3-4 more rounds. She's standing on the rail or beside the rail, looking over, saying, oh, my God, I don't believe this. Later, they bought us a drink in the lounge thing of the boat because they were just so fascinated. Where did it go? So I used my favorite favorite response. Oh, it's probably just a phase. Neil grew it.
Wow. But I also like that story because it also shows the spirit of EFT, which I believe is just going out there and trying it, you know, and having also a playfulness with it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The more serious we get, the more the subconscious mind says, hey, this is a big problem. And so we generate more problems that way than necessary. Like I've got another favorite phrase with certain people when they come in and they're totally swamped in their negative stuff. I'll listen to 5 or 6 off their list and I'll go, boy, those are big problems, weren't they?
So emphasis on those were big problems.
Yeah. Change tense on them. You know, that's a big problem, wasn't it?
Right. What about people who want to use EFT for themselves? They feel like they have their own trauma that's holding them back. Is there a time when we should use EFT by ourselves and another time when we should work with someone else?
I would suggest always trying it on self. You're going to feel better to some degree, with very, very, very small exceptions. If that doesn't work to your satisfaction, then consider finding a practitioner that knows what they're doing and go from there. But I'm amazed. It's one of the few tools that I will use on the phone. Ethics prevent me doing hypnosis, et cetera, for long-distance clients on the phone. I don't want somebody in Toronto or South Africa going into a deep trance on the end of a phone and me having to jump a plane to go over there and wake them up.
Right.
So I don't use the certain tools, let's call them, I don't use on the phone. But EFT is so easy. So what we do is wire them or email or fax them a diagram of the points, ask them to practice so they know where they are. Then I help them with word patterns over the phone, and they tap themselves. That group, let's call them the phone group, I think has the highest percentage of then wanting to go and at least take a seminar, if not find a practitioner for the heavy stuff. I find a large percentage of them will write us back and say, I found this practitioner that does training. I think I'm going to sign up and really experience it over an 8-hour seminar. Mm. So, you know, start yourself. If it doesn't work, then consider the alternatives. Take a training, watch some more videos, find a practitioner that you feel you can work with, go from there.
When we're working with ourselves, how do we find the core problem within ourselves? Are there certain questions we need to ask ourselves?
Well, all brains do one thing in particular. They do many things, but we're going to zero in on one because of the content we're in, called EFT. All brains generalize. It's a part of a accelerated learning process of higher mammals. For instance, we stick our finger in a flame at 2 years old, perhaps the first time we've ever done that, and the brain makes a decision, don't do that again in the future, even though it's a different flame, because it hurts. Except for little boys, of course. We have to repeat it 5 or 6 times before we get it. You know, stick our finger in, yell, stick our finger in, yell louder, keep at it. But anyway, so generalizations, you can hear them with words like all, everybody, never, etc. Not to take you down that linguistic path too far. So they'll come in and they'll say, I'm unhappy. That's a generalization. Why? Because they haven't specificated where and when And what, specifically, do they experience unhappiness with? To try and tell me you've been unhappy for 20 years, well, our research says a human being cannot hold a state for over 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if they're saying they've been depressed or upset for 20 years, they're really deleting the happy times from their conscious memory and only focused on the negative. However, that's where they are. They're in a generalization. I've been unhappy for 20 years. I may start with that, the generalization. This unhappiness.
But if we're working with ourselves and we catch ourselves using those words, then that's what we should do.
Yes, start with the generalization. This unhappiness, until you've done a whole round. Now ask yourself, because that calms you a bit, right? It loosens up the circuitry. All right, go inside, become introspective. I'm unhappy about what? I mean, I watched the Comedy Channel the other night, and I was laughing, so that wasn't it. What am I unhappy about? Now you're moving towards specificity. You're moving towards, I'm unhappy with my job. Okay, we're still generalized. What about the job? Well, my supervisor. What about your supervisor? Whenever I'm in his presence, her presence, I feel like a little kid. Aha! This feeling like a little kid would be your next round when I'm in the supervisor's presence. This feeling like a little kid when I'm in the supervisor's presence. Then go test it. How do you test it? Well, next time you're talking to the supervisor, notice if you feel like a little kid or not. So that's moving from generalization towards specificity. The ultimate specific is what happened in time that caused the feeling. If you can get to Saturday, Dad beat me up, and this is how I felt, you're at a core issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you can follow the trail through starting with the generalization and then follow the specifics. You're actually training your brain to edit.
Okay. I sometimes hear when someone has a trauma, say they have come from an abusive childhood, where they don't want to feel better because they have the judgment of, well, whatever happened to me was bad, and if I feel good about it, then that's not right because what happened was bad. I can't change what happened. Do you understand what I mean? It's
yes.
Like they don't want to feel better because they think that saying that what happened was okay, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Usually, I will give them some feedback like, well, you see, what you went through caused a belief. And beliefs are like filters, right? I mean, we will kill for beliefs. More people die every year through difference in religious beliefs than any other cause. You talk like that until you get a head nod. And people are going, yeah, I'm starting to get it. Say, now, there's two things I'd like to point out for you. There's you that was born unique on this planet, and there were certain things that happened to you in your family that were classified as abusive. Now, you can decide you were put on this earth to be abused, and most people balk at that, or you can decide I'm okay, but that abuse was not, and what I'm doing is tapping out the effects of the abuse. So you sort of separate it psychologically from the person. In other words, you're okay, but that abuse was not. Let's get rid of the abuse, the effects of it. I've used analogies like computers. You know, I've got one in my office, and if that first one didn't work, I'll say, look, turn around and look at that computer. They go, okay. Now, let's say I tell you, the computer expert, it doesn't work. If you've taken a little bit of training in computer repair, you're going to go, oh, that's too bad and all that stuff. Then you're going to say, what specifically are you doing on the computer when it doesn't work? Well, it won't send emails. Oh, let me look at your email program. So he's no longer focused on the computer, the generalization. They're focused on the software, running the email program. In a like and similar way, human beings are the computer and the software are the experiences. And what we're talking about is deleting the unwanted effects of unwanted experiences, unless they think they should be punished for the rest of their life.
Now, what if we have a trauma and part of us wants to deal with it, but it also seems very scary and overwhelming, and that's really what's preventing us from taking those steps forward to get help or to do some tapping? Do you have any suggestions? Because I find that happens a lot where you know you have a problem, but even the thought of dealing with it is just too scary.
I would start with the PR point, the karate chop point, mm-hmm. and I would have the client or myself say, even though there's part of me that doesn't want to deal with this, and I don't want to face it because it feels awful, I'm okay, but that feeling sucks, or whatever word patterns they want to use, and loosen it up. By separating the two, I'm okay, but the problem is not. Again, it allows us to go, okay, I'm just focusing on the software of the computer, not the computer itself. Because what they're really saying is, if I start thinking about this to tap on it, I'm going to feel bad. And it's at that moment they need to realize, yes, you're going to feel bad, and maybe for the last time in your life. Your defense mechanism up to now has been to avoid the subject. What we're talking about is making this subject neutral so it doesn't bother you and enhancing your choices. For instance, if I have a social phobia, I can't leave the house. Well, let's clear that so you can. Doesn't mean you have to. It means you're at choice. And when we're at choice, that's when we feel better. Mm-hmm. We can choose. I can get into the biochem of it, but I don't know if that would be a little further than you wanted to go.
Well, why not? Can you touch upon that? Because I think that is very interesting when we see that other side.
Okay. I'll give you the shortest version I can. We have a part of the brain which is older, much older in time. It's been around a long, long time. And it has various names. The midbrain, the limbic system, emotive brain, energy brain, lots of names for it. But the idea is there's an older part of our brain that essentially produces two signals, or electrical charges, if you like. We move towards, we're attracted to something, and we move away from. So it's a pretty basic, at least at our level of, this level of discussion, it's pretty basic. It moves us towards, or it moves us away from. When we go through traumas, when we go through this, when we go through that, we can miswire it. So we can have a bad behavior hooked up to a good feeling, and we can have good things hooked up to a bad feeling. For instance, public speaking and doing that successfully, you help a lot of people and you get paid for it. That's good. But somebody may have a negative hooked up to it. So all we're doing is saying, when you get into an overwhelming, unwanted emotional response, that part of your brain, the limbic system, has now taken over. It is in charge. It is dominant. So the chances of you understanding consequences goes way down. The chances of using logic and rational thought is almost non-existent. Why? Because all those tools, logic, rational thought, understanding consequences, etc., are in a different part of the brain that normally is in charge. The frontal lobes, the thinking brain, the intellect. So when we see that biochemical switch, there is no logic available. So let's take a real quick example. A student I work with had an IQ of 137. He came in with the paperwork. However, sitting down on an exam at the local university, he went blank. When we arranged to do some electrophysiology research on him, we showed that part of the brain, the limbic system, lit right up. All the oxygen was going there and the nutrients. And the thinking brain, where all the answers to the questions were, was almost shut down. So when I explained it to one of the professors, this is biochemical, biological, as well as psychological. Maybe psychologically triggered, but it's not real. So they said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, well, what I want to do is try something here. It's called tapping, blah, 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 and give him a brief science explanation of EFT, the science behind EFT. They said, okay, and the student agreed and signed the release papers. So I said, all right, sit down at the desk. And he was sweating and dry mouth, and he said, I can feel my heart pounding in my chest, and my mind's blank. This blank mind was the first round. This nervousness around exams, this fear of what teachers will do when I don't fill out the forms, this feeling I'm stupid, everything he said. That same day, we got him writing an exam. And when we looked at the electrophysiology stuff, the frontal part of the brain, the frontal lobes, had lit up again, and the limbic system had gone down. So a way of thinking about it, we flicked the switch and put his thinking brain back in charge. By the way, prisons are full of people where the emotive brain is in charge. They want the money, and they want it now, so they rob a bank. Whereas the thinking person will say, well, robbing banks make you go to jail, so I don't think I will.
Right.
So that's a little tiny, tiny bit of the science. So what we're doing... go ahead.
I was going to say, that's incredible, and it makes so much sense, because one thing that I found is anytime I feel stuck with a problem where I can't find a solution, I'm trying to figure something out, when I tap, I become so much more innovative. The answer just seems to come, so that proves exactly the science behind it.
The science validates what you just said. Yeah, all the science does is validate the mechanism involved in validating your statement. Mm-hmm. The part of the brain that does the mental maps, does the creative thinking and choices and possibilities, is not in charge when we're under emotive stress. We're more in fight or flight. We're in a very basic, almost survival mode. So we don't remember phone numbers. We don't remember appointments. Tap, tap, tap. Oh, gosh, I got an appointment at 3. The other part of the brain is back in charge.
Or when we feel like we're hopeless, like there's no way out, and, you know, we can't get the money we need, or we can't get into a relationship, or any of those blocks, it kind of shows the, it also shows that when we block it, it also shows that when we tap, we'll also start finding the answers, that certain problems we thought had no solutions will suddenly come up. I am going to remember that next time I have a problem.
It is so true. You see, and the beauty of this whole thing, if you're working, let's say, with somebody else, you tap them, they start thinking their way out of the problem, and they think you fixed them and give you all the credit. And you go, yeah, that's right. Which is true. All you've done is made favorable conditions favorable for their brain to operate the way it's supposed to.
Right. Can you... can we wrap up here with an example of someone that you worked with that had a trauma and how you worked with them, this story?
Okay. Years ago, I believe it was Reader's Digest. I've forgotten, but maybe one of your listeners can look it up. There was apparently a story of a woman living in a cabin way up north and had to be air evacuated for a pregnancy and big party after as everybody coordinated the rescue effort, used telephone trucks to block the highway. Young pilot landed on the icy highway with her in tow and transferred. So they had a big party. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 20, 25 years when I meet her. Now she's an older woman, and she offered the following. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, before my alarm, I take my tranquilizers and I get down beside the bed and I pray. And I'm praying that God will calm my system and stop the movies. And so she described all the symptomology. So just jumping through that, because we had a few sessions and I know you don't have much time left here, she described the dry mouth, heart palpitations, nightmares, wake up with the bed wet from sweat, guilt, all kinds of things. So as I had her tell the story, each piece, you know, the snowmobile coming in across the field and blah, 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 and every time she had an emotion, we tapped it. The big one was her fear as she looked out of the window of the small 172 Cessna coming down on that highway. She totally believed those wings would be snapped off by the telephone poles. She couldn't, you know, the perspective was wrong. So she thought she and the baby would die, and she felt guilty about killing the baby. Years later, 20-odd years later, when I meet her, she's still running that movie of the wings coming off the plane, which did not happen. But it was so imprinted into her brain, she'd wake up screaming with this plane crash that never occurred. So we had to tap all those. It took quite a few sessions because... you know, sometimes you can overload a client. You're tapping and tapping and tapping, and you can see they've had enough. You've just got to stop and let them settle. So, you know, you don't want them driving a car in an unresourceful state. So I think we had 6-8 sessions, and we cleared all those. So the nightmares disappeared. The night sweats disappeared. She came off the medication with the help of her doctor. She was on 4 different meds. The tranquilizers, I remember. blood pressure stabilized, the heart palpitations and something else about the heart, disappeared. They went back to normal, et cetera, et cetera. And she began to enjoy her grandchild, and her short temper was gone, the whole thing, insomnia. There was a whole list. As a matter of fact, it was written up, and I believe also on Gary's site, Gary Craig's site, I think he published it. But I was contacted by another association to ask if I'd publish the story with her permission for training purposes of students. So we did that and just changed her name. So there perhaps is a good example. She had multiple issues from that experience of being up north, trapped in a cabin, no heat, husband away, and about to deliver a baby all by herself, and what they did to help her.
And all you used was EFT?
That was my very early days with EFT, so it was exclusive. The technique, mm-hmm. And the intervention technique was predominantly, let's say, EFT. Just tapped it out.
Wow.
My guess is, from the old methods I had, just as successful, probably would have taken 6 months or longer. You know, hypnosis, visualization, desensitization, timeline therapy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My guess is it would have taken, and I'm only guessing, 6 months minimum. But what I found was how fast and permanent EFT did it.
And it's an interesting example as well, how you said that you split it up, that it wasn't like you went and tried to deal with the whole trauma at once, but you went with steps and dealt with, very specific aspects of it.
Yes. You see, when you're making those kind of changes, Rebecca, you're actually affecting brain chemistry and so on. Here's a one you can write in stone. For every state of mind, there's a physiology. For every physiology, there's a state of mind. Another way of saying that is when a person's in the trauma state, their brain chemistry is different than when they're in the normal, happy, let's go to the party state. We find this in depression. You know, a depressed person has a different brain chemistry. So you're affecting all those things. Now, you don't want to overdo it, because too much change, the brain gets overloaded. It just can't do it. It's had this problem for 20 years, and now it's gone? That can be trauma unto itself. So you've got to be respectful of your client when you're dealing with trauma. You do so much, and then they start looking a little woozy, and you say, something tells me you may want to take a break. What do you think? Oh, could we stop?
Yeah. Well, also to be, and another point is also to be respectful with yourself when you're working. To
Absolutely.
Not try to get it all and overwork yes. yourself, but take it step by step.
Yes. And if the person's anxious about that, I would recommend their first round is starting with the PR point. Even though I want to get all this done in one session, just like all those experts, and I want to show off and be one of the best in the world, I need to accept myself, but I'm going to slow down a little and do it right. Because remember, once you fixed it, it's permanent.
Alex, thank you so much. It was incredibly enlightening, especially the science aspect of it.
Just a taste of it.
Well, so, you know, and it's an example. I'm definitely going to keep, you know, doing, looking, you know, watching what you're doing, and hopefully attend some workshops and things, because it's really some fascinating work, and I hope the listeners decide to do the same and go to your website and find out what other fascinating things you do.
Excellent. And the more we can get out there, the happier the world is. What a nice place to grow old in.
Exactly. Well, to all you listeners, I hope you enjoyed this presentation, and keep tapping and take care.